Breakfast Bites, a program designed to help you navigate computer technology and the Internet. The show airs the first and third Saturdays of every month and is hosted by Felicia King. To contact Felicia, visit her website, qualityplusconsulting.com.
Supporting WGTD is the Bristol Renaissance Fair, carrying you back to 16th century England with huge turkey legs, ale, wine, feasting, and nonstop entertainment on 13 stages and in the village streets. Open Saturdays and Sundays through Labor Day. Online at renfair.com.
Support for WGTD comes from Andrea's. It's patio season, which means al fresco dining at Jack's Cafe. Stop by and enjoy the sun along with one of their breezy summer cafe specials. Updated daily at andreasgifts.com.
This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, assistant professor of educational leadership at UW Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconsert, and this is Education Matters. Today's program features Dr. Robert Newman. Dr. Newman is a national expert in college preparation and performance. For more than 25 years, he advised more than 12,000 college students and their parents at Marquette University. Dr. Bob has been quoted in USA Today, Wall Street Journal on campus, Washington Post online, U.S. News and World Report, and the New York Times online. He is also the author of a trio of books. They are called College Smart, Start College Smart for Students Who Are Beginning College, and College Smart, Practical Tips for Parents. Today, we are asking Dr. Newman about his best advice for college students and their parents. And I have to say, as a college professor who worries about the success of her students, and as a parent of a 12-year-old about to enter eighth grade, I find these books interesting and full of good advice. So, Dr. Newman, tell us a little bit more about your background and how you came to write these three books.
Well, when I finished my doctorate in English at Marquette University, I took a position. It was temporary and part-time. That's all that was available at the time. And within a year, a job opening occurred in the college office for a part-time assistant dean. And, of course, I had no idea what an assistant dean did. But anyway, applied for the position, and very quickly it turned into a full-time position. I could teach occasionally, and for me it was just the right thing to do. From the start, my big job was conducting the freshman advising program at Marquette. And again, right from the start, I could understand the problems that students have when they begin college because I had similar experiences when I started college. And things haven't changed in terms of the pressure that students face as they move through college. After 25 years and an early retirement, I decided I've got to write this down. I've got to write down about everything I did with students, all the things that they taught me and that I taught them. And so that's the background for the College Smart series.
Okay, well, so 25 years and 12,000 students.
Yes.
Over that time, several things came to light as being consistent and very helpful things for students to know. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. I think about when I first started, the idea of giving advice to students, giving them support, wasn't considered very serious. In fact, there were people who would say, well, if they've got all these problems and they need all these advices, you know, why should they be in college? And, well, I'm not sensitive to that kind of attitude. And so as I progressed through my career, I think I was able to persuade the university that this was an important service to give new students advice and further to give pre-professional students advice, meaning pre-medical and pre-law students, trying to see students through to deciding on a major, and that's, of course, a big, big deal. And as time passed, I think we developed a much better intelligence about what kind of service college students really need in order to make the best of their college education.
Right. I think what you're saying about that attitude, and I have heard people say this at the various institutions where I've taught, well, if they can't be serious, then maybe they don't belong in college. But I think from, you know, one of the things I got out of your book is that students can be quite serious, but just not in very productive ways. And that part of what you're trying to offer is advice for them to sort of focus their energy in the places it needs to go.
Students are very serious about things. They have as much, I think, energy and liveliness as students have always had as they prepare for college and as they enter college. The thing is, what's happened in recent years is that the idea of going to class, being assigned topics, subjects to learn, having to study, having to take tests, I'm afraid students don't take those things as seriously as they used to. And as a result, we're at a point now where students, starting with high school, students are studying fewer hours than ever. And that continues into college, where the demand for study hours is strong, much stronger than high school. And when students don't make that transition from high school to college by understanding how much time they have to put in on their courses, things break down really fast. And that's when they break down, then students drop out of their freshman year. It's hard to believe these figures, but only one-third of college students graduate on time. If we're talking about two-year colleges, the statistics are even worse. So the the consequences of not taking studying seriously are really great, especially when you consider, boy, how expensive college is these days. My aim, I have a lot of aims in writing the book, but a big aim is to get students to understand what college is. And I could say very simply, college is a classroom. College is the place that you go to on a regular schedule. You learn different subjects. You learn with the teacher. All of the other things that are associated with college are great. You know, all the extracurricular activities and so forth. But college is learning in that classroom. And if there's one thing I'd like to convey to student, that's it.
Okay. So I do want to start just by walking through the book for students, and then after a little while, we'll look at the parent book. So that way, if you want to get your high school students in front of the radio right now, or maybe go back and force them to listen to the archived version of this later, that might be a good idea. But first, I just want you to describe your book, the layout, the length of the chapters, why you designed it this way, because it's kind of unique. It's not like a book you'd have to sit down and, you know, read all in one sitting or anything like that.
Right. I often say about College Smart, it's not novel. You don't have to start at the beginning and reach a conclusion. In fact, I also say you can open the book at any page and you can get a good piece of information and advice. The spent a long time working on not only the organization of the book, but the tone of the book. Students, parents, teachers, etc., are going to find that they're going to hear my voice in the book. I'm talking to them. I'm not going to sound like a college professor. I'm going to sound like a college dean who's trying to get across some information to people. That's very important. The book is based on 12 strategies. 12 strategies for success. These are the basic ways of being successful in college. And I'm saying to students, if you understand each one of these, there's no question but that you'll be successful. The chapters, Karen, are probably 15 to 20 pages long. The book has little quizzes to take. The book has about 10 or 12 personal stories from students. Mm-hmm. So in designing the book, we wanted to make it interesting. In creating the tone for the book, we did put in a lot of time, you know, making it personal, I think is the word. And mm-hmm. when I say we, I'm talking about my wife, Jude, who is my editor and co-author. And, you know, we're both English majors. And so we know what tone means and we know what a friendly tone is to set in a book. And this really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I notice you encourage the reader to sort of ask themselves questions all the way through, like, what do you really want to get out of this? Or, you know, why are you here? What do you see yourself doing? And those are obvious questions, I think, but it's surprising how many students don't do that. They don't sort of take the time, I think, to think through, okay, if this is my goal, where should I be now?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. They're not asking themselves some very important questions, and they're not being asked these questions. For example, what is college? Well, it's a bridge to your future, and it's a bridge to careers and jobs. College is supposed to prepare you for what happens after you graduate. You can be doing any kind of thing, any kind of career, but college is a preparation for that. What are you supposed to do in college? And as I mentioned earlier, college is each classroom you enter. It's each subject that you take. You're supposed to focus on it carefully. You're supposed to learn carefully so that you can take tests. So college is to develop your mind. It's to broaden your mind. It's to help you find out things about yourself. So again, college really is the bridge to the future. I would also say that one thing that seems to drop out of the conversation with students, and that is whatever subject you're taking, it's going to teach you something. When students begin to ask the question, well, what's that good for? You know, or is that going to help me practically? And I say to them, every course that you take adds something to your intelligence. Every course that you take adds to how you think about things. So I tell them, take each course as seriously as you can. You may not like it, but at least respect it.
It's interesting that you say that. One of the approaches in here is, you know, to take every course seriously, which, again, you'd think everyone would want to do. But I had a recent experience where we had a group of high school students visiting us at Carthage, and they were talking to some of our science majors about what the various science careers that they were aspiring to. And it became clear after a short bit of conversation with these students that they really wanted to avoid something that required a lot of math. And I stopped and I said, whoa, time out. If you are only choosing your path by how to avoid math, I think you need to rethink this, because you can't avoid math. You know, I was a history and theater major, and I had to take statistics as a graduate student in order to study education at a higher level. Everyone needs to understand mathematical reasoning, and rather than saying, I don't like this, I'm not good at it, I'm going to avoid it, the thing to do would be to use the time you have to get better at it and allocate the time that you need to get better at it.
Right. And we're both on the same track here. When students decide that a course is really not worth anything, or it's even worse when they say, I'm not good at that. Well, I say to them, the course is worth something. You may not know it right now. And if you're not good at it, then study more to get good at it. Again, it goes back to the way students think about learning. Not being an expert in this area, although I'd like to study it, I'm thinking that students with computers and smartphones, and they can draw up information instantly. I have a feeling that that's what they're beginning to think about learning. I'll press a button, and it'll draw the information up and into my head. And it's going to take a lot to convince students that, no, if you're going to gain knowledge, and that's what college is for, you've got to study, and study takes time. You can't avoid that formula there. And when you argue against that formula, well, you're arguing against your education.
So let's that leads us to something. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit on our list. But you have a chapter called Assign Yourself Homework, in which you introduce what you call the layer cake strategy for learning. And I love this analogy because I'm a baker. And hey, right, who doesn't like cake? But tell us what you mean by this, because you're saying study, and I think a lot of students think that means do homework.
Do homework.
But what do you mean by assign yourself homework?
Right. Let me differentiate between homework and studying. I say that homework is really a grade school and a middle school exercise. In a class, a teacher will say, okay, for tomorrow I want you to do this. You know, write this paragraph, do these problems here, read this section. Okay, student goes home, does that. End of homework, and that's it. And the student, you know, it's good that the teacher is making that assignment. Students stay on top of things. By the time you get into high school, you're going to have homework assignments, but you're going to have to study longer than just doing your homework. And the reason you do that is you have to look ahead to college. All colleges say to students, whether they get it or not, that as a college student, you're a full-time student. You have to work at your education here, and they'll usually give you numbers that for every credit hour you take, you have to study for 2 to 3 hours. So if you think that you're able to move from high school, where you're studying probably less than 7 hours a week, to college, we're expected to study 30 hours a week. If you don't understand that, you're going to run into what I call the glass wall. You don't even know that it's there, but you smash into it. You're behind in your courses. You're behind in your college courses. You don't know what's going on. And that's probably the main reason why about 1 in 4, 25% of students, of freshmen, drop out. They just can't handle that work. I give them the analogy of an athlete. So you're a great basketball player in high school, and you want to get on the basketball team in college. Well, how do you evaluate how good you are? Well, you don't say, well, I play basketball fairly well and I play a good game and, you know, I get along with my teammates. But if you're not going to ask what's expected of you when you get into college, I'm afraid you just won't make that make the team. Same thing with learning.
So tell us what the layer cake strategy is. What's layer one,
That's
two, right.
three? Okay, let's get back to the layer cake here. Let's pretend we're a student. We're taking a course. All right. Well, let's say that your first level of learning is working ahead, making sure that you've done the reading that you were supposed to do, doing the problems that you were supposed to do before you get to class. So you're becoming familiar with what's going to be taught in class the next day. You're becoming familiar with it already. That's the first layer. Then let's go into class, all right? You know, you're going to be taking notes from the professor. You're going to engage in conversations in the classroom. You're going to ask questions and listen to the students. Did I mention taking notes? But in the classroom then, you're listening to the teacher, you're taking notes, you're asking questions, and you're listening to other students. Each one of those constitute a layer of learning. So think of it, by the time you finish that class, you will have the layer from preparation, all the layers in class. Then you go home, okay? If there's a homework assignment, of course you do it. But you have to study. You have to put in a certain number of hours. You have to, again, try to stay ahead. But when you, for example, if you have to write an assignment, you don't write it once, you rewrite it. If you have to read a chapter, you don't just read it once, you reread it, and you're taking notes. So each one of these steps constitutes a layer, and put them all together and you've got a terrific learning layer cake.
Okay, so everybody keep the layer cake in mind, because I think it's a really helpful analogy for students. Just a reminder, you are listening to WGTD HDFM, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of College Smart, a series of books with strategies for success in college with Dr. Robert Newman, is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page, or you're invited to listen again there, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. One of the things that you spend a lot of time talking about with students is time. As you said, and I say this to my students always, you should be spending 2 to 3 hours for every hour you're in class studying for class. And I try to gauge the outside reading assignments to meet that goal. You also put a lot of emphasis on the first 2 weeks of college. Why are they important, and what can college students expect to do during those weeks that will set them on a positive path?
I give the analogy in the book of an athletic team. They've got a game here, and they're losing. And then they finally lose the game. And somebody says, well, I could tell why they lost the game. I mean, you know, they came out of court, and they were unprepared. They didn't have the right attitude. So what I'm thinking about there as I talk to students and the importance of the beginning of a semester is they have to be prepped for it. You know, they have to be ready for it. They have to be in the right frame of mind for it. Now, how do you do that? Well, you have to say to yourself, okay, what am I doing here? I'm starting a new semester. Am I going to keep up my grades? Do I need to bring my grades up? What are my goals here? I'm going to do better this semester than the last semester. Or I'm finally taking this course that I've been looking forward to, and I'm getting closer to the end of my degree program. And that should pump you up. And that's sort of an exercise for your mind and for your learning skills from that very first day. If you stay pumped, if you build it up in those first 2 weeks, well, the rest of the semester you will just feel very good as you move from week to week, from test to test.
There's a chapter entitled It's Not Free Time, where you talk about a time map. Why do students need a time map, and how would you make one up?
I don't know how you can be an organized student without a time map. We see, again, because students don't study very much in high school, that they really don't need this map. But when you get in college and the schedule changes for you, you're in the classroom fewer hours, probably half the hours that you were in high school. You're expected to keep up in the course according to the course outline and the syllabus. And when you think about what your general schedule is without mapping things for yourself, well, you say, these hours I'm in class, and these hours I'm not in class, so what do I do? Well, in college, as we mentioned, just about the number of hours that a student should be studying each week, they need a map to follow that shows when their classes are, shows them when they're going to study. It shows them that they should be studying on a regular basis. A certain number of hours each day should be blocked off for studying. And that's what I'm referring to here about mapping. You have to take time at the beginning of the semester and map everything out so you're sure that these three areas are accounted for in this map: class and studying, and then what? Then your free time. Okay, so you go to class, that's one segment. You study, that's another segment, and then you enjoy yourself for the third segment here. So a lot of students, you know, begin college and they say, boy, you know, all of this extra time, you know, I have a lot of time to, you know, enjoy myself and do whatever I want. But again, because college requires this kind of mapping, you have to get out of that mentality of, if I'm not in class, well, what should I do? Well, if you're not in class, you should be studying.
That's right. Another thing that you suggest that students do is to meet with their professor and be proactive about that, and don't wait till there's a problem. Actually, just go in to meet with your professor. What are the advantages of doing that early?
Well, put that in context here. I don't think students, I think students are as friendly, you know, as they've ever been. And maybe when they're in high school and they talk to their teacher, go and talk to an advisor, that may make their friends be suspicious about why they're doing it. You know, are they sucking up to the teacher? You know, are they trying to get extra points for this or that?
Or maybe they're in trouble.
Or in there.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, what's wrong with you? What's going on here? Well, leave that kind of thinking behind you when you get to college. You're meeting your professor, you know, in the classroom on a regular basis. And if you're really into the subject matter here, you're going to have questions about the subject that may not come up in class or hasn't been brought up in class. Go to the office hours of the professor. Every university and college that I know of requires professors to have probably at least 3 hours a week of office hours. And if there is one complaint that professors make that really stands out is, why don't the students come in and talk with me? I'm here, you know, come in and ask me questions. Or just sit down and let's talk about the subject, you know. Mm-hmm. Professors are experts, like teachers are, in their subject. You know, they like to talk, you know, not just in the classroom, but they like to talk outside the classroom. So this could be considered another layer of learning here in our learning cake. Mm-hmm. You're talking with the professor, and that adds something more to how you're learning and how well that learning stays with you.
And I have to say that I enjoy talking to students in my office. I mean, sometimes I'm short on time, and so I try to make it clear that it isn't about the student, it's just about a prior appointment. But having students in your office is fun. It's nice to talk with them about what they see and what's happening in class, and if they have some experience that sheds light on the topic. I learn a lot from those conversations. So
that happens in the classroom too,
right?
Doesn't
exactly.
It? A teacher who is, you know, turned on to the subject, is turned on to teaching, and probably learned something new.
That's right.
You know, in the classroom. So yes, get together with your friend who's in the class. You
that's
know,
right.
Make it a two-on-one situation.
That's,
yeah,
and that's
professors.
Totally fine, too. That yeah. sometimes is even better, is
sure.
to have two students to come and
yeah.
talk with you. In fact, I assign projects a lot of times so that I can talk with both students or three students at once about the, you know, what they're thinking, and they have to talk with each other. So
sure. If you're a student, for example, who's still trying to get some idea of a career, boy, ask that professor,
mm-hmm.
you know? Taking a course in history. Well, do I have a career out there mm-hmm. in front of me? Well, you don't have to be a teacher of history, but that's a very good profession to have.
Right.
And but what you'll come around to with professors is that don't think of your major as necessarily a track to a career. Think of your whole degree program as a track to your future.
Which leads me to sort of emphasize one of the big thing points that you make in your book, which is your job is to learn how to learn, right? And yes, I know it seems like a cliche, oh, lifelong learning, whatever. But you attach it directly to professions and work. So explain the connection of what's happening in college and how that's going to make you a better employee or entrepreneur later on.
Okay. Think about the different subjects that you might be taking in a semester. Let's give you a schedule like this. You're taking an English course, taking a history course, you're taking a science course, you're taking a foreign language course, and mathematics. Did I mention math?
There you go.
Okay,
math,
but there
yes.
you go. But this is this is your schedule. Now, first of all, if you don't know it, every time you take a course, you're thinking and learning differently. If you'd like to get into a really interesting subject, there's a lot written about how the brain develops. And your brain is always developing. One of the reasons I call my book College Smart is that your brain is at its peak of learning skills when you're in college. And if you reach that peak in college, then you'll just keep on moving up as you move into a career. But you can say, all right, there's my English course. Well, communications, reading carefully, writing carefully. Can you think of a more important group of mental activities than communication? Every job is going to require that. Let's say you're taking a foreign language. Well, taking a foreign language doesn't mean you're going to try to become bilingual, although we need a lot of bilingual people these days. It helps you learn about language in general. It helps you be a better communicator. It opens up the world to you a little more. Mathematics. You mentioned math. You cannot handle a career in the 21st century unless you have that math part of your brain turned on. It doesn't mean that you have to be moving from algebra into calculus. That's the usual route for science majors and engineering students. But take a math course, for example, like statistics. Again, in this century, who can get along without understanding statistics and figuring out how to learn, figuring out what to do with statistics? Now, that's math. You have to understand what those numbers mean, and it's going to be in every job that you take. There's no question about it. You could take another math-like course, and that would be economics. One of the elective courses that I always recommend to students, you know, again, who are looking forward to a career, is econ. You have to know, whatever business you're in, you have to know how the world of business works, how money works, and you learn that in an econ course. For students, for example, in the liberal arts, I tell them for elective courses, they can take other math-oriented courses, like courses in business administration. You know, a business administration college could offer a course, a general course, in personal finance. I can't think of better knowledge that that students could learn these days about how to take care of their own business. So take a science course, you know, if you may even have science required for you in your degree program. All sciences include mathematics. Mm-hmm. I mean, so when we talk about learning how to learn here, if in high school you learn well in all of your different kinds of courses, if you take your math course and you learn math well in high school, you're going to learn math well in college. So you've learned how to learn math in high school, and now you're going to be able to learn it in college. And you can just go down your list of all of these different kinds of courses that ask for different kinds of thinking to get your brain working all together here, and that's learning how to learn. Every time you take a course, you're learning how to learn something like that course better. Move into a job. Again, you know, we were saying, it's mathematics, it's statistics, it's communication, it's being organized, all of those things that you should do in college.
That's right. There's no predicting what jobs are going to look like 5 years from now, let alone at the end of a 18-year-old college freshman's career. So being prepared with lots of thinking skills and lots of other kinds of skills in various fields and trying to put them together, even if they don't seem related, is the way forward, I think, for most people.
Right.
Right.
If you read, as I do a lot, if you read what business people say, when you ask them what they're looking for in their employees and they're not finding it, they're looking for things like communication skills, right, and they're not there.
People can write a decent email or memo, it sets them apart from every other employee.
Right. I can't give you the number, the amount exactly, but millions and millions of dollars are spent by companies having them take courses in English, having them take courses in writing. So when you think that these people have graduated from high school and then college and they still have poor communication skills on the job, there's a famous quotation by a famous CEO of a company who said, just give me an employee who could write a complete sentence. And that sort of sums things up, mm-hmm, telling you that all of the courses that you're taking in high school and college apply to and will apply to what you're going to do in a job.
Well, that is a nice segue into the parent book, and we don't have a lot of time left, but I have a few questions. First, I just want to remind listeners that you're listening to WGTD HDFM. This is Education Matters, and this discussion of College Smart, a series of books with strategies for success in college, with Dr. Robert Newman, is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen to again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. So the second book, you have three books altogether. The second book is directed at parents. It's called College Smart Practical Tips for Parents. And I have to tell you, I think this is a great resource. I think one of the things that might be, one of the groups of people it might be most helpful for is parents who have not themselves had the opportunity to attend college. You know, that's a big privilege, and many college students' parents haven't had the experience, so they feel like maybe they can't provide the guidance that they need to. I found your book to be very accessible and very easy, bite-sized pieces that make sense, because you compare a lot of the things that you think parents should emphasize is to their own experience in the work world. And, you know, most parents have to work in the work world, so they can see the analogy. So tell us a little bit about some of the strategies that you said. Strategy four in your book is talking and listening. Why is this so important, and how can parents cultivate these skills in their children?
In the college, when I finished the College Smart book, even as I was working on it, I was saying, I've got to get this information to parents as well. Because when young people get into high school, what are they thinking about? They're thinking about thinking on their own. They're thinking about handling life themselves. And with that kind of thinking, I believe that they believe that the way to do that is separate themselves from their parents. Mm-hmm. It's especially a problem these days because students are plugged in all the time.
Right.
Smartphones, music, and so forth. And so that really separates them from their parents. So one of the biggest challenges here is how do you bring parents and students together to talk about college? And that's what the book is about. I take the 12 strategies from the original College Smart book. I pull them into the parents' book, and I say, every one of these strategies applies. You live in your own life, and you face all of these kinds of strategies.
Right. One strategy that I was especially struck by is your idea. People sometimes pay their students for A's or something, but you say one of the things that would help get your students ready for college is to pay them to study, not to earn grades, but to study. So give us the distinction and why you think this would work.
Because they're not studying, we have to ask ourselves, how do we get them to study?
Right, rather than just do homework, study.
Rather than just do homework, right. putting in that time, you know, in the evening at home, studying, unplugged studying.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're not going to be persuaded that they should do this. They are now on their own. They don't have a teacher saying they have to do this. So the only way I can see to persuade them is to pay them, give them the idea. And I think this is a good idea that that school is work, especially when you get to college. It's a full-time job. So if you're going to put in the time to be a good student, I'll pay you for that time. And just as you said, not grades, but for the amount of time studying unplugged, mm-hmm. privately in a study place.
Right. And one way that you could monitor this, I'm thinking of high school students, is having them show you their rewritten notes, or that they did the reading, and then you can discuss the chapter they read with them so that you can tell that they've really done it and absorbed it. And then just talking to you about it is a way of studying.
Being positive about education, how important that is. I'm afraid you've heard the term helicopter parents, parents that are constantly getting involved in their kids' education in a negative way. You know, you didn't give my daughter a high enough grade. You're being unfair and so forth. You can't do that as parents and expect your kids to grow up and be independent and be ready for college. So never say negative things about education.
Right. And I really emphasize people should go out and maybe grab these books and take a look, because I think there's a lot here. How can they find them? I noticed you can get them on Amazon.
Amazon.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. And that's the main place.
And just keep in mind that the spelling is Robert Neuman, Neuman. Is that correct?
That's correct. At getcollegesmart.com.
Right. And and then you said you also have a course.
Yes,
now?
This is terrific. I hope college and high school teachers are listening here. We designed a course, a one-credit course, called College Smart Blast, and it It's put in a can for these students, in a sense. So any school who would like to teach a one-credit course based on all of my College Smart strategies, we've got it for them. And we've tried it out for 1 year. The students loved it. The response was overwhelming. I just loved seeing how well they responded to it.
So check out getcollegesmart.com. Yes.